Iku Iluna, please rise. Auhea o ko I ko ka aha, inahe kuleana I mua o kea aha, ho o kolo kolo ki e ke hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. Inaui mai, e maliu mai, ilohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. E noho I lalu, please be seated.
Please call the case.
SCAP 22-368. Sonia Davis, Jessica Lau, Laura Lee B. Riedel, and Adam M. Walden, plaintiffs appellees, versus Richard T. Bisson Jr., County of Maui Office of the Mayor, Scott Turia, County of Maui Department of Finance, and County of Maui Defendants Appellants. Bradley Sova, arguing for Defendants Appellants. Jung Wook, Wookie Kim, arguing for plaintiffs appellees. Argument on the merits.
All right, good afternoon. Aloha, everyone. Today's proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel as well as on Alelo. I'd like to welcome our substitute justices, Judge Shanlin Park and Judge Jim Kawashima. I'd also like to welcome teachers from the Department of Education who are visiting the courthouse today and are in our courtroom. Counselor, are you both ready to proceed? All right. Court's allocated 30 minutes for each side. Just to confirm, Mr. Sova, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal. So your initial argument will go for 20 minutes, and then we'll give you a warning at that point. Mr. Kim, you'll have 30 minutes. We'll give you a five-minute warning. All right. Mr. Sova, please proceed.
May it please the court. I want to focus today on two primary issues. First, what is the specific interest at issue in this case? And second, what specific process is necessary to protect this interest? I believe that discussion will make clear that the interest here is possession of personal property and that the process due is not a contested case under Chapter 91. As such, we believe the Circuit Court erred in finding jurisdiction over this matter. In general, a claim of due process right to a hearing has two steps. First, is the particular interest property within the due process clause? And second, if the interest is property, what specific procedures are required to protect the interest? Now, something that's created a lot of confusion in this case is there are really two asserted interests here. First is the interest in property itself, and second is an interest in occupying and maintaining that property on public lands. Now, as to the property itself, the Circuit Court correctly concluded that personal property is something that people have a due process interest in. You know, the record is replete with case law that says exactly that, and I'm not here to dispute that today. But I want to talk about a second interest that can be seen in this record, and that is the right to occupy public land, the right to maintain personal property on public land. And although plaintiffs have a protected interest in their property, they don't have a protected interest in occupying public land, maintaining their property on public land, or dictating the county's management of the lands under its control. And plaintiffs have described their interests this way. Appellants in their notice of appeal stated they appealed from a final decision to, quote, execute the forced eviction and vacature of people and their belongings from punitive County of Maui property. But this isn't an interest that the state or federal constitutions protect. It's not something that there is a legitimate claim of entitlement to. And the case law makes it clear that there is no such claim of entitlement. In Levon, the court stated the district court did not recognize, and we do not now address, the existence of a constitutionally protected property right to leave possessions unattended on public sidewalks. Later, the court goes on to say, nor does this appeal concern any purported right to use public sidewalks as storage facilities. And there are many, many other case law citations that support that there is not a due process right to maintain property on public property, even if there is a due process right in possession of the property itself. And because this interest is not property, there's not a due process right that attaches to this interest. Even so, the county did afford at least some process on the issue of maintaining people and possessions on these lands.
Can you explain to me, how is it that you're divorcing these two interests? I mean, there's a concede. I heard you concede that the chattels are, or the personal property is property for due process analysis. And, you know, if you look at the cases from the Ninth Circuit and elsewhere, it doesn't seem to be much doubt that we assume that it's property for due process analysis, whether it's on public sidewalk or not. So I'm not sure about the distinction you're trying to draw. Are you suggesting there's some sort of a lesser property interest here because the property, it was kept on public property? I'm not sure I get that, or how I see it's consistent with the cases that have been cited to us.
So thank you for the question. Yes, there is an interest in possession of the property itself. And, you know, the courts that have looked at this have stated that possession of the property is the protected right, even when it's maintained on public land, even when it's maintained on lands in violation of trespass statutes. So I'm not saying that the property loses protections when it's on public land. What I am saying is that there's been a separate argument that's permeated all these cases that is talking about the right to maintain the property on public land, and that this is not necessarily a protected interest itself. The protected interest is in continued possession of the property, regardless of its location.
Is there any specific case that you can point to, though, that distinguishes or sets some boundary as to placement and when it becomes occupation subject to eviction? Because if you are going to separate property right in the race itself from the location of it, then I'm not clear on whether any of the cases cited actually draws that distinction. They seem to be primarily based on occupation that amounts to trespass, or occupation using the property in effect as a proxy for trespass. So where does that separation flow from?
I think the problem has been that in many of the cases that are cited, the municipalities have stated that there's no interest in the property because it's maintained on public land. There's no interest in the property because it's maintained on land in violation of trespass statutes. The distinction I'm trying to draw is we're conflating two different issues. The interest in possession of the property itself, which is constitutionally protected, and the ability to store property or maintain property on public land, which is not necessarily protected. And that is suggested in Levon based upon the citations I just gave.
So what are you suggesting would have been the proper due process that is due under these circumstances to protect the property that you acknowledge the plaintiffs, in which the plaintiffs have a property right that you acknowledge?
The proper process to protect the property at issue is the process that's been acknowledged in multiple cases, most notably Deoccupy Honolulu, where there was inventorying, storage, and the ability to reclaim property.
Right. So that did not happen here, right?
That did not happen, correct.
So you are acknowledging a due process violation here then?
I'm conceding that there may be a due process violation based upon the failure to provide those specific procedures, and it's our position that those specific procedures are the ones that are required by due process and not a Chapter 91 contested case hearing. So yes, there is a concession there, but not one that would rise to the level.
What were they supposed to do when the notice gave no notice whatsoever as to how they were supposed to, what would happen to their property if it was confiscated?
Well, I will note there was an availability of alternative procedures here. First, all the cases, even those that have recognized the property right in the possessions, have acknowledged that the property will not be implicated in the action if it's removed from the property at issue. That doesn't eliminate the due process right over the property itself, but it is something that we believe is mitigating here. Additionally, there were alternatives.
Well, I'm sorry, so what were they supposed to do? File a deck action? Is that your suggestion?
I think that would be one course of relief, and had that been done here, it may have stopped the suite from moving forward at all. But that's
so contacting and speaking to the mayor directly was not enough.
So there was contact with the mayor. I believe that occurred on September 17th from the record. And at that time, the mayor did speak individually with Ms. Lau as well as Ms. Davis. But it appears that the contents of that conversation were about whether or not the sweep would move forward, the timing of the sweep, which goes to, you know, what I've asserted is a separate interest in the ability to continue to occupy public property.
Doesn't at least one plaintiff allege that statements were made by the mayor that the property would be held and not destroyed, that there would be a way to retrieve the property?
I don't recall that specifically from the record, and the record is devoid of anything that indicated that the county did adopt the procedures that I just stated would be necessary. The circuit court found that such procedures were not in place, and its findings of fact, and we've not challenged that.
So if the plaintiffs were seeking to have some answers as to how they might be able to contest not just the suite, but also their property rights, you're saying that their only alternative was to file a post confiscation and destruction declaratory judgment action?
I think they had the ability to file a pre-deprivation injunctive motion in the circuit court or in the U.S. district court. Additionally, well, I'll just leave that point there.
I'm trying to understand where you're going with your argument. So you've I think conceded or that there may have been a violation because there was no inventory storage and opportunity to reclaim. Why isn't that the end of the discussion? I guess your argument is, nevertheless, despite that, you want to address the question about whether there should or shouldn't have been a contested case hearing?
The main issue here is whether or not a contested case was required by law to have been held so as to confer jurisdiction on the circuit court.
Okay.
So even if there was a property right that was implicated, even if there was a potential violation of the due process right, it doesn't naturally follow that a contested case, as defined in Chapter 91, was the specific process that was required.
So what process was required?
The process that was required would be, as I stated, the inventorying, storage, and ability to reclaim, which is outlined in Deoccupy Honolulu and related cases. And to the extent that did not occur here, you know, that would be the process violation. But that would not necessarily imply that a contested case, as defined in Chapter 91, was the necessary process to address the possible deprivation. And if we apply this specific procedures test that this court has utilized to determine the level of process necessary, I think that becomes clear that the inventorying, storage, and reclamation procedures are the processes necessary to address this particular interest, not a contested case as defined in Chapter 91.
How were they supposed to get that done then? I'm still very I don't understand what you're saying. How were they supposed to get that right enforced?
Under these circumstances, I think they would just have to pursue the alternative redress of seeking an injunctive action, filing a Section 1983 civil rights tort, and getting declaratory judgment that way. But it doesn't naturally follow, even if there was a process violation, even if the procedures were deficient, that this would constitute a contested case so as to confer jurisdiction on the circuit court for the agency appeal.
So the county would prefer a 1983 action with concomitant attorney's fees and additional damages over than the process that the plaintiffs sought here. You're encouraging the 1983 actions. I just want to make sure that's clear for the record.
I don't know that I'm encouraging it. I'm just saying that the relief that they are seeking here under the tests that have been established and utilized by this court is not the appropriate relief. So even if there was a failure of process, it doesn't naturally follow that a contested case was required to be held under the particular circumstances.
Well, it seems that, you know, You're conceding there was violations now, but it seems like you're talking prospectively. In other words, if this happens again, or Maui County wants to do a sweep next month, you know, if Maui County doesn't have a retrieval process, storage, a template for that, and how individuals can get back their property, then it would still be a violation, right? I mean, has Maui changed their ways?
So Maui County has not conducted any sort of enforcement action, certainly not of this scale, since September of 2021. And I think our policymakers are much more aware of the requirements that are necessary in order to conduct an action of this kind. And I know that there has been work on adopting procedures that would be due process compliant. So yes, prospectively, I don't believe anything of this kind would occur again without those procedures being in place. Our primary argument today is that those are the procedures that are necessary rather than a contested case hearing.
But, and how would a, you know, and I, the cases you've referenced or are referenced in this case, I see there's Levon, there's the Berkeley case, there's Deoccupy Hawaii, Brown's mentioned. Those are all injunction cases, so it's sort of pre, you know, let's do it ahead of time. And that seems to be your solution here versus a contested case hearing. But let me ask you about a contested case hearing. In your view, how would a contested case hearing work?
Thank you. And that's part of the reason why I don't believe a contested case would be workable in this situation. Because if we look at Chapter 91, there are very specific procedures that are required in every contested case hearing. There are notice requirements for all parties. There's the ability to cross-examine. There's the ability to present evidence. You know, there were 40 requests for contested case here. And the record varies, but we have anywhere from 40 to 80 people who are residing in the Kanaha area at the time this occurred. So even just complying with the notice requirements under Chapter 91 would be arguably prohibitive. There'd be no way to proceed with the contested case hearing. And the contested case, to the extent it would be conducted prior to an enforcement action, wouldn't actually provide any greater protections for the actual property interest at issue than the procedures that are outlined in Deoccupy Honolulu. Because we don't know who is going to be at this location day to day. We don't know what property is going to be stored at this location day to day. Having a contested case hearing before the sweep occurs doesn't actually give any idea about what may ultimately be implicated within the sweep, and doesn't, if property were to, say, come on to into the area after the contested case would be held, those people affected by that would not actually receive the process of the contested case. That's why, under the facts and circumstances presented here, it's the retention and reclamation procedures that are the process necessary in order to address the actual property interest at issue, which is continued ownership of the chattels.
So you would say, if you're looking at the Flores factors and, you know, sort of determining what specific procedures are required to comply with constitutional due process, effectively the second and third Flores factors sort of refute, let's say, the position of the plaintiffs?
I would agree with that, yes. I think there is a very strong government interest here in maintaining government property. And that's actually an interest that has a constitutional dimension to it as well. You know, the government has a constitutional obligation under the public trust doctrine to maintain the lands and resources under its control for the benefit of all people.
I understand certainly the interest that the county or the government might have there. Also, on a contested case hearing, wouldn't there be a right to an appeal?
Yes, there would.
Would that delay things further?
I have to imagine it would delay things further.
And the plaintiffs are essentially arguing there's almost two processes. There's almost, we want a pre-sweep and then a post-sweep. And contested case hearings, I mean, they essentially argue for contested case hearings on both the front end and the back end, or at least on one end. And I imagine your position is the same as far as the burden in holding contested case hearings for a pre-sweep or a post-sweep process. Is that right?
Yes. We think that the post-sweep process is what is appropriate. It's what addresses the property interest at issue, whereas a contested case, in addition to just being logistically, I think, impossible to effectively conduct under these circumstances, wouldn't actually address the interest that's at issue. It would go more toward the whether or not you accept the distinction.
And as far as these processes you've talked about, as far as retrieval, storage, the ability to get property back before it's just summarily destroyed, if a county, whether it's Maui or another county, decides to do this, you would agree that they better have airtight procedures to comply with due process and comply with some of the things that have been mentioned in the cases that I cited. Is that correct?
I would agree.
Thank you.
See, your position now, it seems different from, you know, and if I missed it, I apologize, but I the argument you're making now didn't appear to be the argument you were making in the, or that the county, I realize it wasn't you, was making in the circuit court, where it was sort of this notion that, hey, it's properties on public land, there's a lesser interest, or their interests are more, you know, are more limited. So the seizure and destruction of the property is justified. Now you're basically conceding that there were, you know, there were due process violations, or to the extent there would be, there are things that could have a different way to address it, yet kind of the position you took down below forced the circuit court to have to make a ruling on whether a contested case hearing was available, because there was no alternative presented to the court other than that. So it seems to me you sort of backed yourself into a corner, backed the court into a corner in the circuit court. And I don't know if these arguments are waived or exactly what, but help us make sense of that.
Thank you.
And so, I don't want to discourage you from making a concession you believe is appropriate, which, you know, it's
well, it sounds like he's made that concession. You've essentially hedged a constitutional violation in so many words, haven't you? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could imagine this case would have gone quite differently if Deputy Corp Counsel had come in, Your Honor. I could see that the flaw here was that there was no notice of a pre-deprivation, that the property was going to be stored. Here's where it's going to be stored. Here's how you get it back. And, you know, where do we go from there? But that's not the posture that the county put the case in. So the judge have to decide, okay, if you're just going to flat out destroy property, then is a contested case hearing required? And that's kind of the position that the judge was put into.
And I understand that issue. You know, I will say I think I'm presenting it in a slightly different manner, but the county has, I think, at various points acknowledged that there is a process right in possession of chattels. You know, looking back at the December 7th, 2021 hearing, Mr. Rowe, I think, advanced a somewhat similar argument and stated, our position isn't that there's no redress, that there's no potential deprivation. Our argument is that this is not within the purview of Chapter 91. There wasn't a contested case hearing that was present here, nor was there one that was required to. So I understand that, you know, we may have put the court in a difficult position based upon our earlier presentation of the arguments, but I don't know that this specific argument has been waived or hasn't been presented before.
Very well.
Can I ask one more question before the...
Yeah, no, please.
You know, it wasn't really talked about by either side, but it's sort of... I'm curious. I mean, do you believe the county is an agency per 91-1?
And that's something that we didn't really get to effectively address at the lower court level based upon the court's finding that we had effectively waived those arguments. I don't know that the county would necessarily be considered an agency as defined in Chapter 191. I'm not even sure, based upon the record in front of us, which specific agency was tasked with providing this contested case were it to be held. I know it's been represented in the appellee's moving papers that the contested case requests were delivered to the Office of the Mayor, the Office of Finance, even to the Department of Corporation Counsel, my office. So it's not clear to me in the first place who the actual agency even is in this case. So it's difficult for me to specifically answer whether it would be a Chapter 91 agency.
But the plaintiffs named the mayor in this case, right?
That's correct.
And 91-1 defies agency to include, it says each state or county board, commission, department, or officer. And when I look at the notice, it doesn't say which county department is carrying this out. It says the county.
Yeah.
So wouldn't the mayor be the person authorized by law to make the rules? I mean, who authorized this? It doesn't seem like it went through some county board or department. It's the county of Maui.
I do see that I have my orange light. I'm going into my rebuttal time, but I'm happy
to answer the question.
Thank you. So, yes, again, that is something that I think has been a bit confused in this matter. And, you know, had the case moved forward and had there been more extensive argument on the other four jurisdictional factors, that may be an issue that was fleshed out both in the factual record and in the argument. But I don't have a great answer to that specific
question.
Even
if you don't have a procedure in place, we have said that a contested case is required. A contested case hearing is required when there's a deprivation of property, a constitutional rights, right? So this would be a situation in which a contested case hearing is required because there is a deprivation of property. So it seems that you should be setting up a procedure if you don't have one already, but some sort of process is due.
Yeah.
And it seems your suggestion that, you know, just go ahead and file a 42 U.S.C. 1983 lawsuit or go to circuit court and file a declaratory, you know, get a lawyer and file a declaratory judgment action doesn't seem like the kind of process that should be due for houseless individuals that are about to lose their property or have lost their property.
To the extent that my argument may have suggested that just, oh, go file a different action, that was not my intention. I was simply highlighting that there were alternative procedures that could have been utilized.
You mentioned 42 U.S.C. 1983. You mentioned DEC action. I haven't, and you say, but it's not a contested case. So what is the due process? What is the process that is due here?
The due process would be the procedures akin to those that were outlined in Deoccupy Honolulu. And even where there is a property interest, even where there's a substantial interest that is at issue, it doesn't automatically follow that a contested case is required to address that interest. So I'm not saying that there was no process due. There was process due.
We're not bound and limited by the Ninth Circuit or federal district court decisions, right?
That's correct.
We can construe our Constitution, especially in light of our Constitution's provisions saying that the law of the splintered paddle should apply. People should be left alone on the street and not be harmed. Perhaps we should be informed by the tenor of our Constitution in terms of making sure people's rights are protected.
As the ultimate tribunal with the ability to interpret the Hawaii Constitution, you are correct. This court can provide protections that are greater than those outlined in federal law. But I will emphasize that the Eldridge test, the specific procedures test, has been utilized by this court for decades in determining what is the specific process that is due when a property right is implicated. And I think that that test has worked well, and I think that that test suggests that process was due, but the process that was due are measures akin to those that were utilized in Deoccupy Honolulu and not necessarily a contested case, and that the Deoccupy Honolulu procedures would actually be more effective in addressing the specific constitutional harm here, which is permanent deprivation of chattels, than a contested case might have been.
Well, thank you. We'll move on to hear from Mr. Kim, and then we'll have some time for rebuttal for you, Mr. Silva.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chief Justice Rechtenwald, Associate Justices, may it please the court. Today, Maui County takes an extraordinary position. The gist of the county's argument is that houseless people lose constitutional due process protections simply because their property exists in public spaces, allegedly in violation of the law. But neither the Hawaii nor the U.S. constitutions permit a government to disregard constitutional due process protections simply because someone is not permanently housed in a structure with four walls and a roof. The county has to respect due process for everyone, houseless or not, at all times. And I wanted to make one really important preliminary point before I address my argument today. We are not here, and this is directly following up on the county's argument today. We are not here because the county made a minor due process error. The county has essentially conceded that before summarily seizing and permanently destroying protected property interests, they provided zero opportunity for a pre-deprivation hearing. And to be quite honest, some of your honors suggested that why are we here if that concession was made? And I would submit that I agree with that point, that had the county acknowledged and made that concession below, we would not be here. Because another distinction that I want to address, maybe a misconception in the county's argument, is that had the county, in conducting the sweep, had they engaged in some form of storage, notice, inventorying, and then provided post-temporary deprivation, notice and an opportunity to reclaim property, we would not be here. The critical factual distinction between all of the cases, all of the authorities that the county cites, including Deoccupy, is that in those cases, the municipalities had standard operating procedures. They had guidelines. They had statutes that protected the due process rights of those whose property was at stake. By contrast, here, Maui County essentially just decided to go out one day and round up everything. And as the record reflects, there were dump trucks, bulldozers that were brought out, and all this property was just seized and summarily destroyed on the spot. And so I think that almost ends the inquiry here, because Maui County has effectively conceded that procedural due process was violated. So for all of those reasons, we ask this court to affirm the circuit court's well-reasoned and correct ruling. And in doing that, we ask this court to clarify two things. First, declare that chattels, that is tangible personal belongings, are protected by the due process clauses of the Hawaii and U.S. constitutions, even if those chattels belong to a houseless person who is present on public property, allegedly in violation of the law. And the second point, which sort of flows from what we have learned today about Maui County's position, is that we ask this court to declare that a municipality may not seize and then permanently destroy a person's chattels without providing a pre-deprivation hearing. That is all that we're asking for here. And again, while the county makes arguments about how, you know, something short of a contested case hearing would be sufficient, that is true under a counterfactual. It's true under a hypothetical scenario in which the county had actually stored and temporarily, you know, in other words, temporarily deprived people of their property instead of permanently depriving people of their property.
Can I ask you this? You know, the first thing you asked for, I mean, isn't that guaranteed by the federal constitution anyway?
It is. And I guess the reason I'm bringing up this request is in light of the county's argument, sort of, in my view, muddying the waters about the property interests at stake. You know, the county has basically said that we have asserted property interests in two protected property interests. One is the chattels themselves, and one is sort of this right to occupy, you know, public property. That's a straw man, or at least the second right. We have never asserted that right. The only protected property right that we are trying to protect in this situation is the chattels, the tangible personal belongings. And, you know, they're, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, and that protection is what you're suggesting. There should be, you know, a pre-deprivation hearing is what you're saying. And in the moving papers, we're talking about contested case hearings. for that pre-deprivation hearing. Now, is there any case that you can cite where there was a contested case hearing required before or even after property was seized when a municipality was using its police powers to, you know, remove people and things from public places?
The Ellis decision, which is cited in our answering brief, does refer to needing pre-deprivation, I believe a pre-deprivation hearing.
But was that an injunction matter like Levon and Berkeley and, well, some of the other cases?
So the reason I don't know that this question, all of these other cases involve situations where municipalities had specific procedures in place to store property. And so as a result, due process does not require a pre-deprivation hearing. But the problem here is that there aren't that many examples of municipalities permanently destroying property on the spot. And the only real example of that is the Levon versus City of Los Angeles case. And, you know, they made very clear that a hearing of some kind was required, or at least that procedural.
Okay, and that hearing of some kind was injunctive relief, right?
Sure, but at least with respect to, and I think there's a distinction because in that case, right, that was a federal court action. Here, we're talking about what is required under the Hawaii Administrative Procedures Act. And, you know, in other words, that statute provides a different set of rights and a different procedure for resolving disputes over
property. I understand. And you in this case, at least, even before the sweep, as I understand it, were, you know, begging for a contested case hearing, let's say, and maybe begging is not the right word, but at least requesting. That request fell on deaf ears.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so there was that mechanism, but there was also, again, sort of to protect the pre-deprivation interests, the other mechanism, which might have been speedier, and perhaps maybe not, in my view, perhaps run afoul of the Flores factors would be the, you know, the injunction method. So in other words, you know, a contested case hearing was being sought, but another mechanism or another measure could have been sought as well. Is that right?
We acknowledge that there are always multiple avenues to challenge, you know, what someone believes is unconstitutional or unlawful action, but House of Sapelli should not be forced to assume that that is the better method, and they chose to file a contested case request here.
And one of the requests, at least, or as I see it from your documents, is that you were requesting a contested case hearing before the adjudication, before the sweep. But the issue really isn't whether the county has the right to do the sweep, because I thought there was also a request to almost stop the sweep. It's more not whether they have the right to do it, but it's if we're talking about deprivation of property, it's how they do the sweep.
So without going too far into the weeds on sort of the legality, I mean, I think that's part of the problem here is that Maui County assumed and basically conclusively decided that what they were doing was lawful, and had a contested case hearing been held, Houseless Appellees and others would have been able to argue that, you know, not just about the manner in which the sweep would move forward, but that the very occurrence of the sweep itself was unlawful, you know, and there was no opportunity to make those arguments. And instead, the county has basically decided that it was already predetermined and decided that what the county was doing was lawful. And so that's precisely why it is so problematic that the Houseless Appellees were not given any sort of opportunity to be heard. And again, I want it to be very clear. We're talking about a situation in which there was immediate permanent destruction of property. And that is exactly why a pre-deprivation hearing is necessary, because there, you know, under the second factor of the Sandy Beach Defense Fund and, you know, Matthews versus Eldridge balancing, you know, the risk of erroneous deprivation is extremely high, meaning it's as high as possible, because once you permanently destroy property, there's no ability to reverse a mistaken decision.
if there were the procedures in place, would it be a different story for you?
Exactly, Your Honor. And that's sort of why I'm at a loss here, because the county is arguing on a set of facts that don't exist in the record and saying that had those facts existed, you know, a contested case hearing would not be required. We concede that. We acknowledge that. But those are not the facts of this case. The facts of this case are that the county took no measures to store property. And also, I wanted to emphasize another really important point, which I think goes to an issue that Justice McKenna raised, which is that the notice itself was defective and constitutionally deficient. What I mean by that is this court in Brown versus Thompson made very clear that notice requires two components. The first component is information about what action the government plans to take, you know, that involves the deprivation of life, liberty, or property. But the second component is procedures available for challenging the planned action. As the record reflects, and I would point the court to the Circuit Court docket 51 at ROA, I'm sorry, yes, Circuit Court document 51 at ROA 11 to 12. That is the notice to vacate. If you look at the notice to vacate, there's absolutely no information provided to any of the recipients about how or whether they could challenge the planned agency action. The only information that's listed there are a set of phone numbers to homeless service providers. Obviously, no reasonable person would read that notice and think, oh, I should call a service provider to challenge the county's planned sweep. And so because of that reason, even this small component of due process of providing a notice was defective in this particular case, and as the Circuit Court also found as well.
Did I hear you say, I'm so sorry.
No.
Did you indicate that if the notice had provided post-confiscation processes, then a pre-deprivation hearing would not have been required? Did you just say that?
Well, I would say that would be more understandable. I mean, I think
I've wondered, you know, what if it was like an area with a lot of people and a lot of belongings, and the notice did not indicate whether or not belongings would be segregated by location of the confiscation. In other words, you know, let's say there were 100 tents, and people living in 100 tents, and all the tents looked exactly alike, and then they had a lot of other things, and the notice just kind of suggested that everything was going to be lumped together, and then it was like, you can come search through everything and grab what you think is yours. Would that have been sufficient?
Under that fact pattern, I think a pre-deprivation hearing would be necessary. I guess what all I'm trying to say is that the facts of this particular case don't present those different circumstances. All that being said, you know, I think because this court is the highest tribunal of the state of Hawaii, this is an opportunity to clarify the boundaries, right, and establish certain guideposts to the municipalities about what particular circumstances would require a pre-deprivation hearing, even if there are storage procedures in place. I just don't know that I can, it is my responsibility to argue that, given that those are not the facts.
We may have to wait for the facts of another case because we don't know what the facts would be.
Precisely, Your Honor.
And Mr. Kim, I'm sorry. I didn't want to
cut
you off. You know, I know your argument is that given the fact that the property was going to be effectively immediately destroyed, that process was due. Does it follow that that process is a full contested case hearing with all the rights that go along with that, or is some more informal or type of process, could that be acceptable? Had the county offered it?
It is the former, in that a full contested case hearing would be required because, and this is why, there's also an important point I wanted to make, which is that not every contested case hearing needs to look the same. But the point is that when the legislature passed HAPA and defined what features, what were the minimum components of a contested case hearing, they were complying with the minimum requirements of constitutional due process, including the ability to present argument, present witnesses and cross-examine witnesses. And so those are fundamental in a situation where a municipality is about to permanently deprive you of your rights. And so for those reasons, we believe that a contested case hearing was required under these facts involving permanent destruction, because anything short of that is undermining or softening the privacy, sorry, not the privacy, the property interest at stake, and specifically the potential for permanent substantial deprivation of property.
Could the county require some sort of intermediate step before the contested case hearing? You know, if you wish to contest this, please submit something in writing to the county office of whatever, explaining why you believe that removal and destruction of your property is not appropriate. Would that be possible? Because that, maybe would weed out some claims or narrow some of the issues and respond to the county's argument that it's burdensome.
So I think it depends on what the county is planning to do. If the county is planning to bring the dump trucks immediately on site and within 10 seconds put that property into the dump truck and take it to the dump, then yes. I mean, nothing short of sort of a full-blown hearing of some kind would be necessary. And again, that's why it's so important that the court pay close attention to the facts in the record here. There was nothing close to that. I will acknowledge that, perhaps there's some case or some situation where some intermediate step that you are suggesting might be permissible under due process, but we are nowhere close to that situation here.
So in that it might be, depending on the circumstances, we might not necessarily need 40 to 50 individual contested case hearings. You could have one to cover it.
Precisely, and that was a point of that I wanted to bring up, which is throughout the county's briefing, they assert that houseless appellees are insisting on 40 individual contested case hearings. We have never requested that, and those are words that were put into our mouths. And so, yes, in this situation, a single contested case hearing that addresses the rights and duties and privileges of any and all people who are asserting that their property interests are being deprived would have the ability and opportunity to be heard. And so that's precisely what I meant by the fact that a contested case is required does not mean that it automatically is the most burdensome format. The statute specifies just the minimum components that such a hearing would have to provide. But of course, every agency holds slightly different forms of contested case hearings. The other points I wanted to address, I think there was some discussion about arguments that were not raised below and that the county didn't have the ability to sort of address the other three jurisdictional elements. Respectfully, we think that is completely wrong. I mean, the county basically filed a motion to dismiss. They alleged lack of jurisdiction. And so even though they only challenged one element of jurisdiction, the court had an independent duty to satisfy itself that it had jurisdiction. And so it assessed the other three elements, including standing, whether there was finality, and the following of agency procedures. And so there was a record below. Of course, this was an unusual fact pattern in that there was no contested case hearing held, but the county did submit a certified record on appeal, and houseless appellees also filed a motion to supplement the record, and that testimony was included. And as far as why they submitted that supplemental record, it's exactly because they had no opportunity to be heard at a contested case hearing. And so those are some of the unusual features of this procedural history. But all of that to say that, and I don't know if the county addressed this argument today, but all of that to say is that the first argument in their brief that, the lower court, the circuit court, improperly made findings of fact or, you know, decided jurisdictional questions that were not before it, we think is wrong, because there was no choice but to complete the jurisdictional analysis below. There has been some discussion about whether or not the mayor would be an agency, and I think Justice McKenna hit the nail on the head that the agency is defined to mean an officer authorized by law to make rules or to adjudicate cases. And here, exactly because there was not enough clarity about which particular agency was conducting the action, the mayor's name was all over the press releases, right? And the mayor went out to the community and spoke. And so House of Sapelis had no choice but to name the mayor in this context, as well as the director of finance who, you know, manages the county's real property. And so I think it's a pretty straightforward matter on that question that this was an agency within the meaning of Chapter 1. So as far as, and I just wanted to confirm one other thing, right, which is that the county's framing of the property interests at stake is just a red herring, or it's going down a path that no House of Sapelli has ever asserted, because we are just asserting that the chattels at stake are protected under constitutional due process. Nothing about the right to store property on public land in violation of the law. And if the court looks at the decision in Levon versus City of Los Angeles, the Ninth Circuit does a good job of addressing that fake distinction.
Mr. Kim, what do you think we should make of or do with the county's concession today? In other words, would we, in your view, we should acknowledge the concession, but nevertheless rule on what's presented to us, which is a case where property is going to be immediately destroyed, and in your view, hold that a contested case hearing is required? Or I think the county is inviting us to fashion a rule under which we would say, perhaps we don't have to reach that issue because they've conceded that this other process would be appropriate, which is one that you, frankly, I think, would have agreed had it been done, would it be appropriate? So what do you make of what we should do with this concession and how it should affect it, if at all, our opinion?
Well, I mean, I think it only simplifies the analysis that should be included in the court's opinion. But I think the court does have to reach the ultimate question of whether the contested case was required, not least because various counties in Hawaii are engaging oftentimes in similar types of sweeps of houseless encampments. And so it's very important that this court clarify that there are certain boundaries beyond which municipalities may not go. That specifically, if they are choosing to engage in some action that permanently and immediately deprives people of their property, they darn well better hold some sort of pre-deprivation hearing in the form of a contested case. Now, setting that outer boundary still leaves municipalities a lot of room to manage all the legitimate governmental interests that they have. You know, House of Sapelis have never taken the position that the governmental interests at stake are illegitimate. They're legitimate, but the position we take is that the private interests at stake are survival interests. And as the court, for example, in Deoccupy Honolulu acknowledged, when you have a property that's about surviving in a public space, those private interests become very weighty. And the same, this court said the same thing in Brown versus Thompson, because as a reminder, in that case, it involved not just any sort of vessel, it involved a liveaboard vessel that the person was using as their home. And for that reason, the court concluded that the private interest was very significant. So just all of that applies to this situation where, as the record reflects, for example, House of Sapelli Davis, who, by the way, is in the courtroom today, she lost 4 vehicles, her shelter, cooking supplies, tables, baby supplies. These are essential items. These are not sort of luxury items. These are the basic things that she needed to survive out in public.
What do you think some post seizure, post deprivation safeguards should be. In other words, you seem to possibly be inviting us to fashion a template. What do you think would comply and ensure and balance, you know, both sides' interests? What types of features?
Just to clarify, this is in a world where the county takes some steps to store property?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a hypothetical scenario, but certain, you know, I think the court could draw upon how other courts have ruled on this question. But in short, some level of post-seizure notice, meaning notice to reasonably calculated attempt to provide notice to potential property owners whose property has been taken, about how they may retrieve such property, and how long, and also information about how long the property is being stored. Now, the case law is pretty divergent on exactly how many days that a municipality must store property, but you know, at least 60 days would be, I think, a reasonable amount of time. And then to the extent that a party raises other concerns, you know, some form of some opportunity to be heard. But, you know, I don't think necessarily that every case would warrant or require a post-deprivation hearing. Again, because due process is somewhat flexible, it all depends on what process, post-deprivation process, the county actually provides. But essentially, notice, storage for a period of time, and an opportunity to reclaim. And in the context of this, of sweeps of property in public spaces, some level of accommodation, I think, would be valuable from the municipalities.
Are you suggesting that there should be a hearing if some things were missing?
That would be one example where a post-deprivation hearing might be able to resolve other issues that arise from the temporary deprivation that occurs. But as a general matter, so long as people have the ability to retrieve their property in a meaningful way, right? And of course, various jurisdictions have different limitations on when and how you can retrieve property. And so it really has to be a meaningful opportunity to reclaim your property. The bottom line is that here, the county, again, and I wanted to emphasize this point again, we are working under a set of facts where the county has summarily seized and permanently destroyed houseless appellees, and not just houseless appellees, but many other individuals who are residing in the Kanaha Beach Park area. And under those circumstances, given that they filed proper requests for a contested case, they were due that opportunity to be heard in the form of a contested case hearing. So unless this court has any other questions, I will rest on my papers.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kim. We'll hear from Mr. Silva for his rebuttal.
Thank you. So I want to make a few things perhaps more clear. I'm not trying to argue that the county did provide the sort of procedures that were in place in Deoccupy Honolulu. I'm simply arguing that those are the procedures that would adequately address the interest that is at issue, which is to prevent permanent destruction of personal property, which is a protected interest.
And how do you distinguish Brown then? Are you then conceding that under these circumstances, because of it looked like there was going to be immediate destruction of everything, the plaintiffs were entitled to a contested pre-deprivation contested case hearing pursuant to Brown? And if not, how do you distinguish Brown?
I guess I would just note first that HRS 91 procedures are not universally required in all circumstances, and that a contested case hearing is not essential to a guarantee of due process. So if we do look at Brown, there was the threat of deprivation of property, but there was not the argument there that a Chapter 91 contested case hearing was required, simply that there was a requirement that there be the ability to have a meaningful opportunity to reclaim property before its permanent destruction.
But and isn't that, it true that the county never even responded in any shape or form to the request for a contested case hearing and said that this isn't the right vehicle, that you need to pursue another course of action? I mean, there was no response by the county for the request.
There was not a response to the request for contested case, and we maintain that a contested case is not the process that is required under these particular...
So why couldn't the county simply have told that to those individuals, that that's not the right avenue so that they could have pursued an avenue? How does the county get to stand by its silence and not responding to the request, saying that this is not the proper venue, and then now take the position that they should have done something else?
Well, I guess I'll first note that it's not necessarily the county's obligation to inform people how to litigate their claims.
But it is their obligation to inform if they think they don't have jurisdiction. The county didn't do that in this case.
I think by not responding, that was an indication that we believe that was not the proper procedural vehicle. But again, I'm not saying that the county did everything correctly or perfectly here. What I'm saying is, to the extent there was a process violation, that would be most appropriately addressed through the procedures that are outlined in DEOccupy Honolulu, and which Mr. Kim has acknowledged would be sufficient to address the property interest and to prevent permanent deprivation. So again, I'm not saying the county did everything right. I don't think in good conscience I can stand here and say that. But what I'm saying is, even if there was a failure of process, even if there is a property right involved, even if there's an important property right that's involved, it's incumbent that that does not necessarily shoehorn this case within the requirements of HRS Chapter 91.
So what process should have been given? I understand your position is they should have held on to the items and given notice and allowed them to reclaim them, but they didn't do that. So you're arguing for something short of a full contested case hearing. What process would have been sufficient in this case?
And I see I'm out of time.
No, you can answer the question. I'll give you a little time to wrap up as well. We're asking you a number of questions during the time you'd reserve for rebuttal. So.
Thank you. I think my best answer to that would be that I have to agree with Mr. Kim that, you know, this is a unique situation. And to the extent that a contested case could be argued to be required for this property interest, that contested case requirement, I think, would only apply in situations where there are not adequate procedures in place, such as those that have been outlined at DEOccupy Honolulu, and which both myself and Mr. Kim have discussed. So to the extent a contested case would be required, I would argue that that's limited to the facts and circumstances of this particular case, where there were not those sufficient procedures in place.
So now you are conceding that a contested case hearing was required in this case.
I don't know that I'm necessarily conceding that full on, but I am qualifying that if a contested case hearing were to be applicable, it would only be applicable in a situation where there were not those alternative procedures present. But we still maintain that even with the weighty interest that was present here, if we balance all three of the Eldridge factors, it's not a contested case that's necessary to address that interest.
Brown talks about some sort of adjudicative hearing. What else could it have been? How could the plaintiffs have gotten an adjudicative hearing pre-deprivation if it wasn't a contested case hearing?
It could have filed for injunctive relief again. And, you know, again, there seems to be a bit of a chasm in the case law, because on the one hand, we have contested case when it's discussed in jurisdictional sense, which is just a hearing that determines rights, duties, and privileges. But then on the other hand, we have a contested case as it is specifically laid out in Chapter 91, which has, as this court has described it on multiple occasions, a panoply of procedures. So to say that every time there is a hearing that determines a due process interest, that automatically constitutes a contested case as defined in Chapter 91, I don't think that's correct under the law, or at least it presents a contradiction within the law.
I thought I'd offered you the opportunity to explain what that might look like, and I didn't I didn't hear you respond. I said, what might it be if something less than a full contested case hearing? Is that, and if you're not, you know, if it's hard to answer that question because it's hypothetical, I understand, but what could it be? Could it be, you know, send a letter to our housing department and if necessary, we'll schedule you for a face-to-face meeting or you know, what is it short of the Chapter 91 procedures?
Well,
that you're arguing for?
I would argue that it would need to be the sort of reclamation hearing that is present in Deoccupy Honolulu, where people have the ability to go and reclaim property before its permanent destruction. And that could even be argued to be a pre-deprivation process, because if we look at Brown, it does state that there was a right to a hearing before permanent destruction. So it could be argued that the property interest is only truly implicated when there is the threat of permanent destruction. So to the extent that a reclamation hearing is offered or could be offered, that would be both the most appropriate means to ensure there would be no erroneous deprivation of property, as well as arguably that constitutes in and of itself a pre-deprivation procedure.
Very well. Anything else? Would you like to address the court to wrap up today?
Again, I'll just reiterate, you know, I'm not here to argue that there was not a protected interest in personal property. The law is clear that there is, but that interest is implicated when there is the threat of permanent destruction, and the best way to address that is to have in place the notice, retention, storage, and reclamation procedures that have been found to be adequate by multiple courts, and that this does not the fact that there is that property interest, the fact that it is implicated, does not mean that contested case procedures are necessary under these particular circumstances, such as to bring this within the ambit of Chapter 91 and confer jurisdiction upon the circuit court for an agency appeal.
Very well. Thank you very much to both of our attorneys for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Please rise. Ua ho'oku'u ia mai ne ke aha ho'okolokolo ki'i ke hanohano o kamoku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.